Today's Mishnah, Masechet Idiot, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, is Perek Gimel, Mishnah Gimel. So we've been in the middle of a series of machlokasin between Rebbe Deisa and between the Chachomim. So we've had quite a few until now. It's a very important inyonim that we've seen in Mishnayos and Tyrus before. And here, we add an additional two machlokesin. This is benogea in yonim of truma. So, me'e avatiach uknivas yerek shel truma. The me'e avatiach is the tummy of that watermelon. And the tummy of that watermelon means whatever's left over on the bottom after you've cut out the main meat of the fruit. So you're left with, like, juice, fruits, and that white stuff on the bottom. People don't really eat that. Or knivas yerek. Knivas yerek is when you take off this sort of brownish leaves on a lettuce, and you break the veggie down to the completely edible and appetizing parts. The rest of it, generally, you throw out. So, according to Rebbe Deisa, those don't have a din of truma, because since people don't normally eat them, he says you can even give them to a czar, and a czar would be allowed to eat them because only the parts that are generally eaten are considered to be truma. Whereas the Chachamim asked them because lemaisa they could be eaten. Since they could be eaten, they have the dinner truma. They don't lose their shame ma'achal just because most people don't eat it, and therefore they still have the kedusha of the truma on them. And a czar is osur. We also have a famous machlokas about another matana to Kohanim. Not truma, but remember, there are other reshits besides truma. And one of those other reshits is reshit hagez. So the Torah says you have to give your first shearings to the Kohen. What is the shear of those shearings in order for it to be chayev in Reshis Hagez? So, there's a big machlokas here. Rebbe Deisa says, Chamesh Rechelot Gezuzot Mona Mona Upras Chayavot Bereshit Hagez. Divrei Rebbe Deisa. So, first of all, you need to have five sheep that you're shearing in order for it to be called a shearing. And that's based on the Pasuk, which talks about Chamesh Tzon Lasuyot. Okay, that's a remez we talk about in Chulin, precisely where we learn it out from. But how much does each one of those sheep, how much wool does it give us? It gives us at least a mona and a half from each single one of them. If it weighs less than a mona and a half, any of those five sheep, then it's not considered to be chayev at all. So it's mona, pras, or bust. So say, says Rebbe Deisa. Okay, that's quite a lot of wool, because that's more than a half a kilo of wool from a single sheep. Chachonim omrim, not true. The shear is chamesh rechelot, any amount of wool. Now, the Gemara Chulin says he doesn't really mean any amount. It's just that because there's such a dramatic difference between the shear of the Chachonim and the shear of Rebbe Deisa, that they call it even a little bit, but there is a minimum, except that it's a massively different minimum. According to him, Rebbe Deisa, it was 1.5 mona. And 1.5 mona, since a mona is 25 selah. That would be 37.5 sla'im. Masha Enkein, according to the Chachamim, all of them together is only Shishim Sela. So that would mean you would only need 12 Sla'im from each one of these sheep, which is a massive difference between Rebbe Deisa and the Chachamim. So there's a difference between 37.5 Sela and 12 Sela from each one of the sheep. So they call it Kol Shein. Mishnah Dalet, Perek Gimel. Now, we've got more Machlokasin between Rebbe Deisa and the Chachamim. Here, we go back to some inyanim of Tuma, which we discussed before. But there's a different question over here, and that is Benogea Tumas Midras. Okay, so remember, when you have something that is meant to be ridden, meant to be lied upon, meant to be sat upon, then it is shayach to this new tuma that only a zav, a zava, a yoledes, a nida, they are able to be matame only on condition that what it is that they're being matame is something that is used for lying, sitting, or riding on, and that's called tumat midras. Now, tumat midras is a type of tuma that's transferable without any type of negia whatsoever, and what's more, it does not suffer from attenuation. And this was the basis of the story of the princess and the pea, where over there, it doesn't matter how many mattresses you've got, you're always going to be metame the pea. The difference, however, that the story got wrong is that the pea is mashma that it would only be metame oichlin, but that's not true. It would be metame anything because it becomes an avatuma, the midras, and therefore it got confused in the story between the elyono shel zav, which indeed is similar to midras, but it's only metame oichlin. So what they did was they confused the elyono shel zav, which would be a case of a boel nida, but then that would not be the princess. That would be the guy that snuck into the princess's bed, and he would only be metame the pea. So as you can see, the goyim got it wrong. But the idea is still a good idea. So therefore, we're talking about what is considered to be ro'i for lying on. So Rabbi Dosa says, look, anything that you make as a mat, kol hachotzalot, are tameot tame meit, divrei Rabbi Dosa, you cannot be metame chotzalot. Chotzalot are the kind of mats that you make from reeds and things. Now, it's important for us to know that there is background to this Mishnah, and they're assuming that you know the background over here by just telling us this little piece. Because in reality, we know that the Gemara in Sukkah explained that the machlokas of Rabbi Dosa and the Chachamim is a machlokas about Barnea's neighborhood, in which if you're in Usha, and here Barnea is showing us right now the chotzalot in Usha, if you're in Usha, everybody agrees that those are nice and soft chotzalot. They're made out of soft reeds, and that is definitely ro'i for lying on. And therefore, it would be tame tumas midras. And the rule is that anything that is mekabel tumas midras is automatically mekabel any other tumas hames. But if it's not roila tumas midras, then it's not automatically going to be metame tumas mace. Why? Because to be metame tumas mace, it needs to have a beit kibul. And if it doesn't have a beit kibul, a flat mat will not be metame tumas mace, unless it's roi also for midras. Fascinating. So when we're talking about the Mishnah over here, we are talking about mats that have a little rim around them. Since they have a little bit of a rim, that gives them a small beit kibul. So you could put grain and stuff on, it won't fall off from the side, and therefore it would be metame tumas mace. So it does make a big difference. But anyway, in Usha, everybody agrees. And the types of mats that they sell in Tveria, says the Gemara there in Sukkah, everybody agrees is not ro'i for resting on. It is hard and will give you a real crink in your back if you try to sleep on one of those mats. So those will only be mekabel tumas meis, and that would mean that they would have to have a rim around them in order for them to be mekabel tumas, since they're not ro'i for shchiva, and therefore they're not a beis kibul. So they have to have a zafa, they have to have a rim. Where are they mechalek? On other places where they don't have a particular type of manufacturing process. So then this Mishnah now kicks in, that all other chotzalot is what it's referring to, are not going to be mekabel tuma, according to Rabbi Dosa, they need to be particularly soft chotzalot like they make in Tveria. But the other type of normal chotzalot, they're basically used for hanging up over a wall or closing a door or whatever. But they're not meant for you to rest on. They maybe are meant to cover a dirt floor or something like that, but you're not meant to sit on them, lie on them, and therefore they're only going to be mekabel tumas meis if they have a sofa. Chachamim omrim? No. Since people will actually lie on them in a pinch, they'll take them out to the seashore, spread them out, lie on them. That is considered to be enough of a tuma, because in that sense, they're also able to be used. They don't have to be miyuchad to be used, as long as we don't say, as we've learned before, amod v'nase malachtenu, wherever you're not misusing something. So the classic case would be a guy takes a bucket, turns it upside down, and sits on it, and he's a zub. He's not going to be metame anything as midrash, because people will say, as Rabbanei is showing us right now, he's going to try to get somebody to say to him, Amod, v'nase malachtenu, go ahead, Barnea, sit down on the bucket, and let's see who comes over first and yells, there we go, there's the bucket, there's Barnea's on the bucket. Okay, now let's watch what happens.
So Mr. Cotton Drink is over, I will be asked to get up from the bucket. We need everyone. The soft ones are in Usha, right?
The soft ones were in Usha, Barnea. We know how makbid you are on your comfort. There we go. Somebody's telling you to get up. There we go. We just got our moment. Great. All right. Lovely. So as long as it's not an amod v'nasim al-chtenu, according to the Chachamim, if it's used, sometimes it can be used on the seashore or something. You don't want to get wet. You put one of these things down. You sit on the sand. That's enough for it to be considered Tameos. The only thing that would not be Tameos is where we're talking about a case of a braid. A braid is different because remember, sock is mentioned, but sock is something that is woven. It's not braided. So the question is, if you make like a braid of things, we haven't actually intertwined them in a classic weave, that is considered to be tahar, unless it's mamish a beged, like a galgilon. And a galgilon is a chassidish, what do they call them? The belt-like thing. I just went out of my head for a moment. Come on, Barnea.
My gartel.
Thank you. So the gartel could be made even as a braid, even though now they don't braid them, now they weave them, but a nice old-fashioned gartel. So if it's a gartel, then it has a din of a beged that's mekabel tuma, and it's called a galgilon because it's mid galgel. You wrap it around your body, and then you stick in the ends as a gartel. So that's called a galgilon. Anyway, so that, a galgilon, would be a beged, but not anything else that's braided. Mashenkin, the Chachomim are machmer on this as well. The Chachomim say, kulam tmeot, a beged, is also including something which is a braid, unless it's the type of braid that is made by tzamarim. Tzamarim are wool workers. And wool workers, what they would normally do is make a very, very loose, there's machlokas over here exactly what a wool worker would use this type of braid for. So either they would use it for holding up the weighing device, for putting the wool in, so it was lightly braided, it wasn't meant to hold together, or they would actually make like a little braided container with had wide holes in it where you could just stuff the raw wool into it. It was close enough that the wool wouldn't fall out, but it's nothing like a weave. And that is for sure not considered to be a beged. There, even the Chachamim would agree that something that comes from tzamarim, from wool workers, is for sure not included in the dinim of Tuma for Kabbalah's Tuma as a beged.